the OTB Podcast Network.
OTB AM. This is OTB Sports Radio.
Tommy Walsh, good morning to you. How are you?
Good morning, Ger. How are you doing?
Happy Christmas to you.
Yeah, same to you.
I was very interested. Will you? I like the hat. What is that? You're an elf.
I'm an elf.
are you on a shelf?
I was earlier on this morning, but I'm up now.
I was going to start by asking, did you guys ever hurl on Christmas Day? Was that like part of your family tradition or part of a club tradition or anything? Or was that a strict no, we're taking the day off?
No, we always took the day off. Christmas morning for us was getting up. Now, my kids are in the next room, they're asleep, or they're not asleep. But so, Christmas morning up early, probably what, 5 o'clock, half five, oh. On you go. Then, but Christmas was massive in our house. They took it very seriously, Mammy and Daddy and Santy himself, of course. So always a massive occasion. We have the dinner around 3:30. So basically we play with our new ties all morning, go to mass if you hadn't went the night before. And back then just play away, watch film, kind of what you half watch about 10 films, I'd say, Jared, during the day. Yeah, eat loads of sweets, fall asleep, watch a film, and you do the same again for the whole day. So, no, there's very little hurling. I suppose when I was, I don't know what age I was really now, but I got a, now you see a set of goalposts in most gardens. I suppose the price of them has come down and stuff like that. But it was a great thing to get that time if you were lucky enough to get it off Santa Claus. And I got one time, a real, a proper goalpost with proper nets. And sure, that made me up for a few years. We still have it out in the garden today. So that was probably the best Christmas present I ever got.
Excellent. And then when you were actually playing inter-county and, watching what you were eating in the off-season, the stories came out, particularly from the Cork team that you had a rivalry with in the early noughties, that they were Christmas Day, they were locked in, they were thinking about you guys. You guys were sitting on the couch eating sweets and watching movies, were you?
Yeah, we took the, that time you could take an off season, so there was none of us going around with six packs or it was a different time. That only all started probably with that Cork team. They took the professionalism to a new level, but still back then, no, we took an off season from November till January. You might go out for a couple of runs, depending on the season you had the year before, you could be out individually, you might be out yourself if you have, a bee in your bonnet, you could be out training yourself on Christmas Day. But as a general rule, you took the 2 months off. Once the club finished, you took 2 months off, and coming back then, you wouldn't be fit, but you're mentally, you'd be very much, you'd be at the fittest that you should be, because the hunger, that's what drives you to train, that's what drives you to improve. So what I used to find anyway is you come back, maybe you mightn't be overweight, a couple of pounds maybe or that, but your fitness will be on the floor. So every train, every Tuesday night, every Friday night, you see yourself getting better and better. And hurling touch wasn't great at that time either, because there was no, floodlights, very little floodlights or that. So it was just running you did until, the middle of March or whenever the you're allowed back on the field when the hour went back. So no, during the off season, we took it very serious as well.
Well, that's the whole point.
Yeah.
That's interesting as well, Tommy, because the criticism that's often there of, say, counties that don't go back to back is that they wintered too well, that they enjoyed themselves a little bit too much in the off season. But by the sounds of what you're saying, actually, sometimes you just need to let off that steam.
You do, yeah, 100%. Now it was a different time, Nathan. It was a different time. Nowadays, even the Kilkenny lads, they're as fit in January as they are in September or July, whenever the All Ireland final is. But going back then, it was only a couple of lads would be really, really fit. Most people weren't fit. Everyone took the off season seriously. And everyone, put their feet up and just recharged the batteries. And you'd often hear, I don't know about the Dublin footballers, you'd often hear them saying they don't really go near a football or anything for a month or two after the All Ireland as well. So, listen, it definitely works. But it depends on where you're coming from as well. So, say if you're coming from a low base, maybe you haven't won a Leinster Championship or haven't won a Munster Championship, well, you need to, go back then, and the All-Ireland for you could be in February or March in the league. That's where you grow your confidence. But I think if you're an annual kind of All-Ireland contender or kind of a contender for championships, whether it's Leinster or Munster, it's definitely no harm at all to take, you don't have to take 3 months off, and maybe take six or 8 weeks off. And you could do little things like, without, you mightn't have to go running, but you could be in the gym. But I'd say definitely stay away from, you know, the actual, the field itself for regards playing the game, because like Willie O'Connor used to always say, like, he'd much rather be fresh than fit. And there's no point in coming back, you know, 100% in January. You can't see yourself improve, and you can't see anything really. You're kind of like the New England Patriots. I've often heard them talk about, they never talk about winning another Super Bowl, to say at the start of the year, because it's too far away. And you lose the hunger, you lose that drive. It's just way too long to be that focused. So yeah, so say at the start of the year, it helped us, Nathan, in regards, you go back unfit, you're just thinking about maybe, like I remember myself and Noel Hickey in 07 pre-season, we were getting outlapped in one of those figure of eights. So this wasn't even a lap of a field, we were getting outlapped in a figure of eight. But like, it just drove us on that, right, the next month now we'll try and go up closer to the top of the group, closer. And slowly but surely it got better and better. And by the time the season kicked off in June, and you're flying it.
Yeah. Let's talk about the winter season. Normally we'd be doing this and we'd be looking back 3 months, but it's fresh in everybody's minds. John Kiely's character is the first thing we want to talk about. What struck you about John Kiely over the course of this shortened and bizarre and also brilliant from Limerick season?
Yeah, like we all know the character of this Limerick team. You know, they've been there at the top table for the last 3 years, whether it's a tough, hard match or whether it's a match where they're hot favourites. They're able to, you know, they're able to perform. And that's what we hear from the teams nowadays. It's all about performance. Well, they seem to be able to perform, whether it's a monsoon or whether it's a beautiful day up in Croke Park. And I always feel that a lot of the time you'll mirror your manager. John Kiely, I thought he stuck his head above the parapet there earlier on in the it was around, I think, after the Munster final, when, you know, the COVID-19, the pandemic, it's still so fresh in everyone's minds. There's people still hurting a lot. There's people grieving, a lot of people suffering. But John Kiely, after they won the Munster final, he said, we need our players. We need the 36 people. Like that time, they're only allowing 26 on the panel. He could have kept, you know, stay under the radar. They're the favourites to win the All-Ireland. Let's not, you know, create any fuss, bring any extra folks on top of ourselves. But no, he stuck his head out and said, I want all of our players, all of our management at the next game, at the, you know, the All-Ireland semi-final. And I think without him saying that, I don't think it would have happened. Like, it wasn't a risk really at that stage, because we were going into the big stadiums. So you could, you know, safely social distance and the extra 10 people. There was no, I don't think, you know, health, you know, there was no risk of any health, suffering of health at that stage. So I just thought it was brilliant out of him. He was there sticking up for his players. He didn't care about John Kiely. He didn't care about, you know, anything else, only the guys that were training with him all year. So I'd say fair play to him on that. The other thing I'd say about his character, Ger, is when, I suppose, it hit home with them was 2009 with Limerick. They were after being hammered by Tipperary in the All-Ireland semi-final. He rang up the chairman or that of the Limerick County Board and said, I'd love to get involved. Because in his head, going out of Croke Park that day, he said, I want to be part of something that this never happens again. And Kiely rang him up and he didn't say, I want to be the senior manager. He didn't say, I want to be the under 21 manager. He said, I want to get involved in any way I can. But in the back of his mind, obviously, it was the goal was to manage the Limerick seniors and go on and win in All-Ireland. And I just thought this year was a credit to him because they're going so well now, Ger. We forget they didn't win, you know, it was about 40 years. I think it was 1940 to 1973, 33 years. Before they won that All-Ireland. Then they had to wait again another, was it 45 years, to win in 2018. So Limerick aren't knocking at the, you know, the All-Ireland final door every day of the week. This man came in, the academy have played a fierce part in this as well, and they've now won their second, which, you know, backs it up that it wasn't just a fluke 2 years ago. He wants Limerick contending, like the Corks, like the Kilkennys, the Tipperarys, contending not every year, but, you know, consistently contesting. So that's what I'm delighted for John Kiely, that he was able to back it up with a second All-Ireland Championship. And yeah, his character is unquestioned to me.
If you look back at the teams that we all kind of remember fondly, it's always a team who has done at least 2 in 3 years or a back-to-back, or like they're now undoubtedly a great team because they backed up that first All-Ireland. And it's the question is how great can they be? We don't know yet, obviously. That's the thing. Like, I know people are rushing to anoint them as a potential rival to the Dubs in terms of how great they can be. Kieran Carey said he thought that they were going to do that, and it was great to hear that, because it's, you know, it's very rare for anybody in the GAA to say their own county is on the verge of greatness, and then for them to back it up was great. But how great do you think they can be?
Yeah, it's a funny one. It's like a young player coming on. We'll say Owen Kelly. Owen Kelly came into Kieran's college with us, an absolute wizard. Pound for pound at that time, he's the best player I've ever seen. What he could do with the ball, the whole school was mesmerised by him. He came into Kieran's in fourth year. And I think we got to 2 or 3 All-Irelands on the back of that. He was just a wizard, and it was his skill level. It was everything about him, his focus, his determination. I remember him standing up in an All-Ireland final against, I think it was Flannans we played in Nina. And he just, it was a tough game. We're after being beaten the year before by Flannans up in Crow Park. And he said, "Give me the ball, lads." And it wasn't a selfish thing. He's just, "Give me the ball," as in, I'm the pressure is on me. Everyone expects me to win the game. I'm not going to let you down. Give me the ball. And he wasn't afraid of doing the dirty stuff either. But what I'm saying is, he was a great player at, say, you know, 17 years of age. He went on and played for Tipperary for 10 or 13 years. Ended up being one of the greatest players Tipperary ever produced and Ireland ever produced. But when he was, you know, 18, 19, you don't say then, this lad is one of the greatest players ever played the game. So I think we should compare that with this Limerick team. They were great in 2018. They were very good last year. You know, they were just unlucky that they were caught right at the end in the All-Ireland semi-final, and they were great again this year. So what I would say about them is they're a great young team. And as you said, what potential have they? Yeah, they have the potential to go on and be one of the greats. Like you're asking about backing it up with two in a row. Like I was looking at the guys, the two in a row is very pop. It has been done quite often. Ger, you go back to the teams that done it, though. They were all great teams. And I'm not saying if you don't win the two in a row, you're not a great team. But anyone that has done the two in a row in history has went down as one of the greats. And I go back to the 60s. The great Tipperary team, 64-65. You had Jimmy Doyle. You had Hell's Kitchen of John Doyle, Mikey Marin, Kieran Carey. John O'Donoghue in the goal. You had Mick Roach. Go back to the 74-75. It was done again in the 70s by Kilkenny and Cork. The Kilkenny team that done it. Think of the names. Kerr, Chunky O'Brien, Pat Delaney, Frank Cummins, Clonie Brennan. The Cork team of the 70s that done the two. They done a three in a row. Jimmy Barry, Ray Cummins, Gerald McCarthy, Charlie McCarthy. The Kilkenny team of 82-83. You had Cody, you had Fan, you had Frank Cummins, Billy Fitz, Big Christy Heffernan. When you
Joe Hennessy.
Big Christy scored. Joe Hennessy, your favourite, and definitely one of the all-time greats here. Big Christy actually scored 2-3 in one of them finals. I didn't realise it. Galway, the 87, we'll all remember Cyril Farrell, Conor Hayes, Pete Finnerty, Joe Cooney. And then, you know, Kilkenny team in 92, 93, the Cork team is 04, 05. So all these teams that have done the two in a row have went down as greats. So I'm sure it will be definitely on top of their list to go on and maybe win it next year. They won't probably focus on it. And for someone that has done it before, Ger, there's no pressure. So when we'll say the Kilkenny team had done it in 02, 03, there was no pressure going forward on that team to do a two in a row. It was all about a three in a row. And that's where the pressure was until that was done. You go to the Limerick or the Dublin guys that won the All-Ireland the other day. I was listening to a few of the interviews with yourselves during the week, and they kept mentioning, I think it was Kevin McMenamin, the pressure was all on the five in a row because it hadn't been done. Now, I know they didn't do the six in a row either, but there was no real pressure as such to do a six in a row. The five was the big one. So maybe there'll be pressure again to do a seven in a row. I don't know. But yeah, I think this Limerick team has the potential to be a great team. You know, it is a great team right now, but to be one of the all-time greats, it has the potential. What does it need to do that? They will probably, like, go to the Clare team that won the All-Ireland in 95 and 97. They didn't do the two in a row, but in my mind, they're a great team. Why? They stay going to the bitter end. They didn't just come and disappear. Even though they didn't win another All-Ireland after 97, they were knocking around the door. They nearly had to be carried out. The Shai McMahons, the Brian Lawns, the Frank Lawns, James the O'Connor. They all finished, I would say, not on a high, if you like, because they just loved it. They wanted to stay going and stay going till the very end. And I think that's what this Limerick team will have to do to be considered, you know, when time passes, one of the odd threads.
We're in the middle of it now, all right. You mentioned Owen Kelly and how great he was in those schools matches. We had Tony Kelly on after his heroics, and it was a point that somebody else had made about how great he is in winter hurling, that even in club hurling, if the club is going well, that Tony Kelly is a sorcerer at this time of the year. And he said it, actually. He's like, yeah, actually, I really love it. In summertime, sometimes you're gasping for breath, but in winter, it just feels like everything is cool and calm. And something suited Tony Kelly about hurling at this time of the year, where he produced week in, week out performances that people were watching the first half of the game on Twitter and then buying the second half of the match on GAA Go because they didn't want to miss it. That's the level that he was at this year.
Yeah, he just had one of those magical years. And for a team that wasn't really an All-Ireland contender after all of their injuries. I think we'll all remember the day, like, down in was it Portlaoise against Wexford? Like, he was scoring points. I'd say he scored 2 or 3 points nearly inside the 14-yard line. We tried that down in the field, 14 years of age, messing around with all our friends. But no one really tries it in the big, big games. Especially nowadays, there's so much analysis. It's all about the scoring zones this, the scoring zones that. But the great managers let off the great players to do what they want. You let off the Patrick Horgans, the TJ Reeds, the Seamus Callans. They have different rules. They don't work on the same platforms that the rest of us work on. So Tony Kelly, I thought he lit up the whole Winter Championship until they were knocked out of it. Like, he was the name on everybody's lips. And when you want to promote, like, Sky Sports are great at promoting the Premier League and the soccer, like, Tony Kelly was promoting hurling all winter. He was just a wizard with that ball. And I said it during the week as well, he was, you know, a source of inspiration for the smaller players, because we're hearing now it's all about being 6'2", 6'4". But here is Tony Kelly, I don't know what he is, maybe 5'9 or 5'10, with the wrists, you know, of a magician, a Christy Ring type wrists. And yeah, winter hurling suits him. I was saying to Owen during the week, he's more, in my opinion, a Ronaldo than a Messi. It's power, it's pace, it's from endless hours of just hitting that ball over the bar. He runs onto a pass, you see, in the winter. The ball is held up that bit more, it's that bit slower, and they'll pass it off to Tony, who's always making a run. And once he gets the ball, especially on that left side, it's over the bar.
Tommy, I can't imagine there's many years in the Welsh household where somebody isn't walking in with a All-Ireland medal, a Leinster medal, or a league medal. And this year, the Camogie medal is coming home. Can you talk about what that was like watching on from afar, obviously not being able to be in the stadium to watch the Camogie final, and what it meant to see that team finally get over the line?
Yeah, Nathan, it was huge. I just thought it was, for all sports teams, Camogie, hurling, ladies football, Gaelic football, soccer, it was for a team that lost so much. Like, before, say, last weekend or the weekend before, as far as I can remember, a lot of them players lost six finals. Six All-Ireland finals, which is absolutely huge. And I think it's a lesson to everybody. You stay going. You stay going. You never say never. And, you know, like, a lot of them were, you know, coming up to the 30 years of age, 31, 32, could easily have said, you know what, this is not our time. It wasn't for us. We won one All-Ireland, and we just weren't good enough to win anymore, and pack it in. I don't want to endure that heartbreak. I don't want to endure that suffering, because the Camogie at the moment, there's three very, very strong teams that are just a bit above the rest. You have Galway, Cork and Kilkenny. And for the last couple of years, it's those teams have always been in the All-Ireland final. So you would say they really need to peak around All-Ireland semi-final stage. It's much easier if you have to peak in January because you have a short-term focus. But you can remember, if you can think about it, they lose an All-Ireland final in September. They know really, at this moment in time anyway, they won't have to peak again probably till next August. So you have to wait, you know, maybe 10, 11 months really before, you know, the real kind of big game comes about. So I just think the hats off to them girls. Like, you know, Claire Phelan was full back. I'm watching Claire Phelan play Camogie hurling, club hurling for the last couple of years. Unbelievable. You know, she'd make any man's team. Her reading of the game, she's not the fastest girl in the world. Her ability in the air, just out of this world. Megan Farrell, Katie Nolan. So they're just a fantastic group. And I was delighted after all the suffering, the Kilkenny public really got behind him. I think even the general public got behind him, because nobody likes to see anyone suffer like that. And for them to stay going and finally get their fairy tale ending, I thought it was a dream come true for everybody.
I hear a lot of stuff. Nathan's shaking his head there. Yeah, lots of history of defeats and thinking about Mayo there. I wonder, is there anybody from that backroom team in Kilkenny who'd be available for an out-chat?
Yeah, I know. It's tough. It's tough, Nathan, year after year, you know. And just looking at the Briefy lads, they're after suffering big time. You know, I think they've lost 5 county finals on top of all them All-Ireland finals as well. So sometimes, you know, you can't see the light at the end of the tunnel, and suddenly something happens. And, you know, when you least expect it. So whether that's the Mayo lads or maybe even the Briefy lads, you'd love to see success come. And I would say, like with Tullerone, when we were, you know, losing year after year, one of the things that kept me going is I'll stay going, you know, forever. And maybe one time it'll happen that we'll win. And, you know, 36 years of age, then finally we done it. And it might be the same with these Briefy lads or these Mayo lads, Dan O'Shea's and Killian O'Connor, that it might happen when the least expected. So stay going and just enjoy it. And, you know, possibly someday it will happen.
We're going to talk to Garrod Hegarty in just a minute, but I did want to ask you about penalty shootouts. There was some excitement about the arrival of penalty shootouts, and we were denied one in the football way by Cavan. And I'd say they were pretty thrilled about the fact that they didn't have to go to them. What's your take on the penalty shootout, Tommy?
Yeah, they have to go. They have to go, Ger.
Ah, Tommy.
Nathan, like, the way I look at it is, you get to a county final under 14. You haven't been, say you're from a small club or a club that hasn't been used to being in finals, maybe a Ryan A final in your county, and your son is on the team. It's 5-4. Your son has the penalty to draw it, or possibly to win it. He misses it and your team lose. Like, how heartbreaking would that be? And, like, we've rivals over the road, Ballycallan, and, you know, it is a huge rivalry at times. I wouldn't even like to see one of them miss a penalty to lose a match. But,
unless they were playing Tullerone.
No, I still wouldn't. I'd rather go to extra time or a replay, let the best team win, because in a match, right, you might miss a chance and you lose by a point, right? And you'll just say, everyone will say after a match, has he missed it? But there's other chances then that you will talk about. So there'll be 5 or 6 guys will kind of blame themselves or half blame themselves. But when it's a penalty shootout, the focus is purely on that shootout, who scores and who misses. And I just think it'd be absolute heartbreak for, and it's not just, say you go to Mass on Sunday morning after, whether it's an All-Ireland, a Leinster final for the first time, a club championship, it could be a club Ryan C championship, and you have to go to Mass Sunday morning and you're saying, and you're after missing the penalty the day before, and you haven't been champions. You have everyone looking at you. They mightn't be looking at you at all, but you're thinking, did I lose this on these guys? Then you have your parents are thinking like that. You have your family. Then even your own parish people, they're feeling sorry for you. So I just think we had something that worked for, was it 132 years? Never any issues. I understand the pandemic came in, so we needed to do something to finish it on the day. But as soon as it's safe to do so, get rid of the penalty shootouts. We don't need that. So, like, I was watching Nicholas and Nelka, Nathan. I don't know, did you see it? Misunderstood, I think it was, on Netflix. He missed a penalty for Chelsea when United, the time John Terry slipped, when United won the Champions League. I always thought it was John Terry missed that penalty. But watching, he did miss it, but I think that was to win it. Nicholas Anelka missed a penalty that meant Manchester United won the Champions League. And Anelka, a professional player, he, you know, no probably big ties to Chelsea. This is, I don't know, 10 or 15 years later. He's still heartbroken over it. He still suffers over it. So I would just think, why put that pressure, that, you know, sadness on people in the GA when we don't have to. So I understand it had to do with this year, but get rid of it.
Why don't we just do next score the winner?
Yeah. So yeah, I'd be open to suggestions, and that sounds good. Oh, if you're playing against a Gael Force window.
Tough luck. Win the toss.
You can't do that in hurling. Yeah, sure, you can shoot from anywhere.
Yeah, but that's
it's
it.
Easy to
you've,
score. It's
this is after
the world to score in.
After extra time, it's been a draw. So you've had 70 minutes and 30 minutes. It's a draw at that stage. Away we are. 70 minutes, whatever it is. At that point, next score winner. Fair enough, right?
Jeez, who are you putting in for the throw in then?
I'd be on for that. Like maybe the referee blows his whistle or something. Say that the time is up. Still a draw match. Referee blows the whistle maybe three or four times, or maybe throws it back in there. Yeah, it could be right there.
Yeah.
And score wins. I'd be on for that. Yeah.
Look, it's we solved it there. Listen, you to name a hurler of the year. Who did you go for?
I went for Grod Hegarty. You know, the pressure was on him coming into the final. He was, you know, he was on everybody's lips regards the front runner for the award. Very difficult to back that up, especially in an All-Ireland final when you're favourites. Played wing forward, everybody knows how the guy plays. So it wasn't that he was going to come up with any magical tricks on the day. He goes out, wins the ball, breaks forward, puts the ball over the bar, and they still couldn't stop him in the final. Everybody tried it all year. The big games, he came up trumps. It's the other side of the game is just equally as apparent. His determination to win that ball, his determination to gain the tackles, the hooks. You know, he probably knows himself he's getting criticism for maybe playing the game on the edge. There's no other way to play the game. I don't call it on the edge. I call it you go for the ball with the full of your mind, the full of your heart, as if nobody else is going to win it. It's my ball and nobody else is going to win it.
OTB AM. This is OTB Sports Radio.
That was an OTB Podcast Network presentation.